Welcome, day jobbers, to episode 176 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where wages are high and employee satisfaction never falters. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And this week we're pleased to welcome a geeky entrepreneur, Lewis Porter Jr., for a discussion on making a business of what you love. Welcome, Lewis.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Glad to have you on and looking very much forward to our discussion. But first, I'll remind our listeners to check us out on iTunes, where we demand reviews and maximum stars. And failing that, we ask very nicely. And with that out of the way, it is now time to kick things off in our usual Nerdstravaganza style with the Weekly Geekly, Geekly Weekly Update. Lewis, we'll all go, and we'll have you go last once you figure out how we do it so you can improve on our Weekly Geekly Update. How's that sound?
Excellent, excellent.
All right. Brian, kick it off.
Not a terribly exciting week for me. I've been doing a lot of stuff, but it just doesn't translate very well. I have been preparing for MizuCon this weekend. That's really my favorite kind of con. It's not giant cluster of 50,000 people or anything like that. It's going to be probably a little more intimate and focused. It's an anime con instead of a anime cosplay gun, sword, keyblade, Star Trek, Star Wars, et cetera, con.
Scattershot.
So a little bit more my style. And I'm going to be there with Lester, the cosplay fashion photographer. Really, really enjoy doing that. I can't wait to see all those cool costumes. About the only other thing I've been doing is that game I told you guys about last week, Star Wars Uprising. I never thought I'd play a mobile game this much, man. Like, I just check it all the time and have a lot of fun with it. It's even kind of like action oriented and it's not turning me off. Like, you know, clicking here, clicking there doesn't really work all that super well on the phone, but it gets me by.
So how nice. Do you compare that to Fallout?
Which Fallout?
The Fallout Shelter.
Never played it.
Oh, okay.
Brian, during our pre-show technical warm-up, I overheard laser blasts and so on. Was that you playing the game?
It was indeed.
Cool. All right. Must be good.
I've moved on from the escorting teenagers on hot date phase to the actually assaulting Imperial Star Destroyers phase. So I'm all excited about that.
It's cool.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. I guess, like, the more you defeat Imperials on a planet, the more likely it is they will show up there and try to like, put you down. So there's, like, a weekly event where a Star Destroyer just appears in orbit and starts, you know, blowing up the planet, and all the players gather and fight it off. I think it lasts, like, 24 hours or something like that. It's, like, a whole big thing, and, you know, it is everything I love and everything I hate in an MMO, because it's a really cool event. All the rebels gathering to fight the evil empire and repel them. And even the graphics, like, you see the Star Destroyer in orbit. And if you're a fan of the movies, you know, like, holy shit, it's a Star Destroyer. That's amazing. Like, oh man, it's such a big deal. And then, like, General Dark Bud leads you to victory over it's just terrible. Like, his second in command, like, weed is cool. I'm totally serious. His name was Green Bud, I think, like, the general, the single best player who, you know, contributed the most victory points and all that kind of stuff. Green Bud has been immortalized in the history books of Star Wars Uprising.
Nothing like stupid player handles to take you out of a game.
Well, he is my general. Respect the position if you can't respect the man.
I'm sure it's only a matter of time before you encounter Darth Vader with 3 R's, so.
I have not seen any knockoffs. I think they're really cracking down on that.
Yeah, that's good.
They might have an algorithm that, like, V equals V times X, where X is any number, something like that, to keep it out, like.
Could be. Anything else?
No, that's it.
Okay, cool. Cam, over to you, man.
Thank you, Tom. I had a decidedly non-geeky weekend. I was kind of a bro this weekend. I went to the Dolphin game and did some tailgating. Whoa. Yeah, man. It was fun to hang out with my friends, but the Dolphins had quite a poor showing. And that was that. Let's see, what else did I do? I went to see the sequel to the Maze Runner movie. That was okay. The Scorch Trials. So that was okay. What else did I do? I'm just in I'm in planning mode. I'm going to all these cons coming up. I'm going this weekend. Chris and I are putting on our Nerdstravaganza press hats and going to cover the con, this weekend there, Wizard World in Fort Lauderdale. I'm also preparing to go to BGG Con in Dallas, on behalf of Yellow, and, I'm going to Metatopia in New Jersey, in a few weeks to present my, the game that I'm developing to a bunch of game developers. So it's just been a ton of planning mostly for me. I'm also planning a bunch of, board gaming splash events, for the Envoy program that I'm a part of. All those events will be at our amazing sponsor, the Adventure Game Store. Just to give you guys a few dates, for some of the events that are upcoming on Saturday, October 10th, I'm going to be demoing the game Maze Racers, which is a really fun little game, that I've just, been given actually by the developer to demo for them. And it's really fun. Come by the Adventure Game Store anytime between 12 and 5 and learn how to play and get some free stuff. October 15th, which is our Thursday night game night at the Adventure Game Store. We're going to be running a Machi Koro, Millionaire's Row tournament. Ton of prizes, ton of exclusives and stuff like that are going to be handed out. If you come to our game night that night and just enter and just play, it's free to play and, should be a good time. And that's it. Just lots of planning, lots of looking forward to good stuff. And, we're hopefully going to have up, next week some video content of some pretty cool, interviews that, Chris and I have lined up for Wizard World Con this weekend.
Awesome. That sounds like a week of planning.
So jealous. I wish I could be there, but, Mizu was a prior commitment.
Mizu's awesome too. I think all of our listeners should go to both.
Just split yourselves this weekend.
Who are you guys interviewing?
Clone. I don't want to give it away, but,
all right. Don't do it. Know, it's Danny Trejo, isn't it?
Hulk Smash is one of them. And, one of the Ghostbusters is going to be another one. So, not to give too much away.
All right. Yeah. Don't give any more away. I already got more than I should have. Awesome. I'm a little bit jealous.
Should be a good time.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And good luck with your game, too.
Thank you.
Chris, that brings it around to you. I suspect I know some of what you've got cooking.
Well, yeah, the Wizard World stuff. But on top of that, I really indulged my inner geek. I've been playing a war game, basically, you know, painted figures down on the table, of Alpha Strike, which is basically a miniatures version of BattleTech. I've kind of gotten in the mood to do that since the BattleTech Kickstarter has been ridiculously, I mean, it cleared in 1 hour. And then I also caught S.H.I.E.L.D. today, or Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I enjoyed that. Basically, it's kind of fun to see S.H.I.E.L.D. being flip-flopped. You know, they were the guys chasing down the mutants, Inhumans, and now they're the ones that are protecting them. That pretty much wraps up for my Geekly Weekly, though.
Awesome. So Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. got good?
Yes. It's been good since Winter Soldier.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I think you told me I have to give that show a chance. I'll put that in my queue. That brings it around to me. Mine's also pretty short and sweet. I've been playing I've been clearing out my last-gen backlog, playing Bully, the Rockstar game where you're a kid in a prep school for delinquents. Kind of fun. Makes me live out the childhood I wish I always had, being a juvenile delinquent without consequences. Let's see, doing that, playing some Fallout Shelter on my mobile device. Got my new Halloween-themed magic bands for the Disney trip that my companion and I are going to be doing on our way back to Florida. They're just orange, and they have our names like with some cool Halloween-y themes to them. And, I got to visit Amazon. Got to visit Amazon. By that, I mean my companion's, relatives work there, and we were swinging by, and we got to use the restroom. So, got to check out the facilities at a facility.
So you got to pee on Amazon. That's good.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the designated area. So, yeah, Amazon shockingly does take security at their facilities seriously. So we were not allowed to just roam around and do whatever we wanted. Go figure.
That's crap.
Yeah, yeah. That was a nice building. What can I say? It's got a feeling there's a lot of cool energy going on in there. So Amazon, let's hope that they stick around. Anyway, Lewis, my bad humor aside, you more or less get the hang of how to do this. Would you like to give an update, sir?
Yeah, this week has been basically a lot of work behind the scenes. I'm getting ready for a Kickstarter in February, and we've been working on just getting the promo adventure ready for Black Friday. And it looks, the guy just turned the rough draft actually yesterday, or actually today, and it's looking pretty good. I like what he pitched. It's very much in line with what we were looking for, so I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Also been paying some writers and artists, waiting, getting more stuff in, so it's been more of the business side, but still a good week.
Sounds pretty awesome. As succinct as that was, that sounds like you're up to quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. A lot going on.
That's great, and probably a perfect tie-in to our episode topic where we're just going to beat you up for information.
That's all right. That's what I'm here for.
Awesome. Well, I won't ask for specific details until we get into tonight's topic, but thank you for that update.
No problem.
And we will now transition into news. Lewis, once again, we will have Brian, Cam, and Chris show how it's done. And if you care to report on any news going on in the Geekoverse, if that's an actual term, feel free. So, Brian, lead on, man. What's going on in the news?
I'd like to say, just before we get into it, we drew lots this week for, like, the big news. So I'm going to not present it, but I was very excited about that news that that Chris will be covering. So that'll make more sense in a minute. The big news for me this week is, have you guys seen that Hitachi has unveiled their crime predicting software?
What?
So it's no secret that our cell phones know where we are and websites know where we are and everything knows where we are pretty much 24/7 and what we do and why we're doing it. Well, Hitachi has released or unveiled or whatever you want to call it, a software package that takes all of that information and predicts when you're up to something fishy by how unlike your average day it is. So if you happen to be driving by a bank that you don't normally drive by, for instance, having recently purchased a ski mask and a gun.
Wow. I don't, I think that kind of discourages spontaneity. You know, if I want to try something different, suddenly I'm a suspect.
I absolutely adore it when big companies read these horrific sci-fi thrillers and are like, that's exactly what we should do. That's a great
Minority Report.
Yeah, man, it's like Minority Report. If we were you, we'd commit this crime, so we're just going to assume you're gonna.
They're kind of saying, like, they wouldn't arrest you beforehand, but they're hoping it will allow police to be properly stationed at suspicious activity in case something does happen.
Oh, boy. That's just what we need, a little more latitude for the police to have trump up just cause for harassing people. Perfect.
Well, at least they're not hauling you off or thinking about it. Hauling off for your Facebook profile thinking about it. So I guess it could be worse.
Wow, that's horrifying. Anything else? That's pretty grim.
No, that's enough for me.
Okay, Cam, any other, you have any dystopian news to report?
Sort of. I think last week or the week before I talked about Porsche's new electric car and how it kicked the Tesla's ass. Well, Tesla must have been listening to our amazing podcast, because they released information on their new Model X, which is pretty freaking awesome, actually. It's just the Model X. I don't think they've come out with the actual name yet, but, it seats 7. It sort of looks like a crossover type SUV. Sticker price is $132,000. But what's amazing about it is that it can go from 0 to 60 in 3.2 seconds, which is 1.3 seconds faster than a regular gas Porsche Cayenne, and is 0.5 seconds faster, or 0.3 seconds faster than the Porsche electric car, and is actually slightly faster than for some Ferraris, Lamborghinis, and McLarens. So that's pretty amazing. It also has falcon wing doors in the back, which are like, it's easy to think about the DeLorean Back to the Future. The wings go up like that in the back of the door, in the back doors. And, but what's most amazing is that it has a bioweapon defense mode. So in case there is a dystopian future, headed for us, and bioweapons are the cause of it, you can just hole up in your Model X, and you should be fine for a little while. I guess that sort of justifies the $132,000 price tag, maybe.
Okay.
Also, speaking of apocalyptic events and dystopian futures, Vin Diesel has announced Fast and Furious 8, 9, and 10 will be coming out.
Oh, no.
So the world will soon be coming to an end with that. And I only had one other one. You know, Banksy, the sort of social artist guy over in England, he put together this installation called Dismaland, which is sort of a, you know, social parody of Disneyland, and, you know, his social commentary on the state of the world. It's apparently now being used as housing for refugees, you know, since all the unrest and all that stuff over, you know, over in Europe and the Middle East have been happening. They've been housing people there. So not only is it social commentary, but it's doing some social good as well. So good on you, Banksy. Keep doing your good work. And that rounds out my news.
Awesome. That last bit was actually pretty uplifting. That's cool, yeah, that they're helping those poor people out. Terrible, yep, terrible situation. So that's great. Look forward to my bioweapon-proof $130,000 car.
it's worth it. It's a bargain at twice the price.
Absolutely. Chris, well, a little mixed bag there from Cam. What you got?
Well, I'm going to start off with the big news. And so while you guys are like watching your lifespan shrink away with the battery with the new Tesla vehicle, I'm going to be headed to Mars, because there's water, baby, and it's on Mars.
Yeah.
And you know, the thing for me that kind of as a side note is everyone's like, oh, there's water. Is there life? And for me, that subject is done. I mean, that's just almost like clickbait at this point, talking about life on Mars. It's more important that there's water on Mars so we can do something on Mars.
Yeah.
There being water there, that makes it 10 times easier for us to do whatever it is we can do. And I think if what we do with it is going to be a bigger commentary on what we are going to be, hopefully, as a species, you know, whether we turn it into just a place to dump our stuff or try to terraform it into something, or I don't know, make it a museum. But that's the exciting part. They've kind of hoped, but now they wanted to come out with a press release to say definitively they're like 98-90% sure. Of course, it is very nicely timed with the Martian movie that's coming out this Friday, which is a very uplifting, you know, America Matt Damon can do sort of film. I'm trapped on Mars. I got to wait 4 years in a habitat that only has supplies for 30 days. It'll get done. I can do it.
Speaking of what we're going to do with it, though, I would like to say that it's very refreshing that we're kind of already being responsible.
How so?
Well, one of the reasons that we haven't verified life, like microbial life in the water, is because the rover would contaminate the water and destroy it if it got too close.
Oh, yeah, I read that. Yeah, so we're not sending a rover or something into this because we might actually transfer, like you said, microbes or something to it, right?
That childlike inclination to like pick it up and point and look, and we're overriding that because it would potentially wipe out the entire planet's life.
It's awesome. I think we're being good stewards already of this place that we haven't even been to, so it's a good hopeful sign for the future.
Oh, when you get a clean slate to start with, might as well start it right. Right?
Yeah. Go Mars. Thanks for having water.
keeping a sci-fi bent for my next item, I already kind of mentioned it already. There is a Kickstarter for a new Battletech game. This is going to be a turn-based game, kind of evocative for those who played the game Battletech on the map. It blew out its goal of like a third of a million within an hour, and now it's all gravy from here. In fact, they've kind of switched from asking for money to asking for more social media, more promotion from their fans. Well, they've said that one of the keys to Kickstarter isn't just the money, but using Kickstarter is a great way to get an awareness of what your project is.
It's a great way to advertise.
Exactly, exactly. And this is just something out of left field, but I thought was very cool. As we know, Marvel Cinematic Universe is including a whole bunch of characters that have should have gotten the spotlight ages ago, and in return, that has prompted Marvel to like give them or re-give them their comic book series. So the Black Panther is coming back, and they're like wanting to be super serious about trying to knock this out of the park. They have a MacArthur Grant winner. That's the Genius Award for sci-fi fans. That's a familiar name because of Octavia Butler. But this is a journalist, and I apologize in advance if he's hearing our podcast. It is Ta Nehisi Coates, and he's a journalist for The Atlantic and done various other newspapers, all top-shelf stuff.
So this top-shelf journalist is the person behind this new Black Panther project? Or
exactly.
Okay.
And he is a comic book fan, so it's not like he just went, oh, I'm just going to pick it up. But no, he's a full-fledged comic book fan, and from what the early comment is, or early buzz is he knows what he's doing. He's a natural at it.
That's cool. Awesome, man. And some uplifting news. So, Lewis, plenty of examples. Would you like to contribute any news? Any cool geeky news you might have heard this week?
I saw the coolest thing this week, and this blew my mind. It's really simple, but it's kind of just amazing. There's this whole new thirsty concrete. This thirsty concrete absorbs 880 gallons of water per minute. They were just showing it like in a flood situation and heavy rains, and it's just amazing to me. Because it's like there's a big dump truck and it's dumping water just onto a parking lot, and it's sucking the water in like it's nobody. It's like it's nothing. And it's amazing to me.
I saw that video. Yeah, they were just dumping water on it, and it was just like, yeah, nothing.
And you're just like, oh, that's kind of crazy. I mean, it's simple, and it's like, okay, great way to save rainwater. It's a cool kind of thing. It says it doesn't work in cold so much, but I live in South Florida, so I'm okay with that.
Mm-hmm,
but I was just like, it's just amazing. Just amazing idea and concept.
I wonder if we can make a seawall out of that.
Just absorb water. Awesome. Yeah.
Just prolong our 50 years.
That's kind of cool, though. Think about, you know, all the water that pools in certain parking lots and that kind of thing. That's all a thing of the past, right?
Yeah. What does it do with it? What does it do with it, though? Does it just pass it through?
It passes it through to the aquifer, and you'll have fresh water.
Oh, it becomes like a big filter, right?
Yeah. So I mean, the idea is crazy, but I mean, the execution is pretty impressive. You know, where couldn't you use this?
It's Minnesota. Kind of genius.
Or for pools. But
oh, I sense an upcoming prank TV show.
Yeah, right.
Jeez.
I'll ask the obvious question, to which maybe none of us know the answer. Does it absorb pee?
I didn't. But I'm sure some people will try it out.
Yeah, some people and dogs will try it out.
There you go.
That's probably the best piece of news. Water and potentially pee absorbing concrete.
We aim high here at Nerd Extravaganza. We aim high.
Aim. I like how you pull aim into that. That's really good. Oh, man. And that rounds out the news. So now it's on to the main topic. And we sort of teased at what it was. Of course, Lewis, we're welcoming you on the show, really because we're interested in sort of what you've carved out for yourself in terms of entrepreneurial success. And I think I might actually turn it over to Chris a little bit to sort of lead the conversation, because I think he has a definite line of questioning in mind, and we will definitely jump in with any questions and comments of our own. So, Chris, go ahead and take it away.
Well, I think the phrase that's always kind of inspired me when I'm talking to you, Lewis, is you've said that with PDFs you make for RPG companies, you basically paid for a car.
Yeah. Yeah. I paid for my Honda Civic, 2005. It's funny because people are always like, oh, that's pretty amazing. And it's like, to me, it's, you know, I started in PDFs really in 2000 and I've been doing it ever since, you know, and I've seen the fluctuates in the market. I've seen the market totally change. And I remember, you know, back in, I always tell people when I got started, I was making, you know, 20 bucks a month. And I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. 20 bucks a month. It's amazing. And, you know, it was pretty impressive. And then in 2002, I really opened out to try more game systems and try more things out. And Mutants and Masterminds became a big hit during that. And then I went from literally, you know, to like $100 a month. Then the following year, I went to $400 a month. And the following year after that, I went to $1,600 a month. And it's like, you know, at one point I was like, whoa, I could actually keep doing this and quit my job. Or at least the minimum, you know, have a nice piece of change left over.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was the heyday of PDFs, when there still weren't a lot of people doing them and the money was still relatively pretty good. And I mean, now there's so many people are doing it now. It's kind of like, it's the standard. Instead of doing a traditional book, you do a PDF first, see if there's interest, and then you do your book. And even books are cheaper now.
For the sake of our listeners who might not understand, we're using the shorthand PDFs. Could you explain what that means in the context of role playing?
Sure. Back in the olden days, when we wanted to do like a PDF, a portable document format on some kind of role game, some role playing topic, we'd go, I wish they did a thing on blah. Like, for example, I wish they did this is my favorite one. I wish they did a source book on dogs for like D20 Modern. So you say, hey, I can't find one. I should do one. So you do a little book on dogs. It's maybe, you know, 5 to 8 pages. You put it online for sale at like RPG Now or Drive Through, and you sell it for like $1.99. And if people like it, they buy it, and you build your fan base from there and you grow it from there. And I mean, I've been doing it now for 15 years. So I've got a pretty decent sized fan base. I mean, I'm guessing, you know, just my RPG Now fan base, I know is nearly 20,000 people. So, you know, it's nice to have those people there that I can easily access and email and, you know, hey, we got a new product coming out. Here's an email to all these people and they can see it. And, you know, you draw a fan base. And from that, I can say I used that to catapult myself into Kickstarter.
Very cool. So in short, they're supplements or they're explorations of certain previously unexplored facets within a gaming system, right?
That's correct.
Okay, cool. And so, sorry, Chris, I kind of stole your thunder there, but I think we were segueing into a discussion of Kickstarter, perhaps.
You're reading my mind. I just wanted to roll back for a moment for those listeners who may not be as familiar with RPGs. But basically, when the new Dungeons & Dragons started back in 2000, they basically opened up something called open source licensing or open game license. And if you put a little legal blurb in the back, you could make your own D&D product, your own Dungeons and Dragons product, as long as you followed certain legal guidelines and different little pictures on the front. And that's kind of what started the business, right, Lewis?
Yeah, I was building another actual RPG at the time. The OGL came out, and we all were like, hey, this is great. We can finally make products for Dungeons and Dragons. And literally, there was a gold rush. And the first group of people, and we're talking 2000, they came in, made printed products and were out. And then I think including myself, it was myself, Phil Reed and Gareth Skarka were like the first three guys really doing PDFs on a regular basis and trying different things. And I always tell this story. It's so weird to think about it now, but it's so true. Initially, you could only cash out or leave the site after buying to buy something if you bought a minimum of $5. So a lot of our initial products were $5. And Phil came along and did something that's, I mean, it sounds silly now, but it was revolutionary back then. He put together a PDF, and the PDF was, I think it was like a four or five page PDF. And he put on it $1.25. And we were like, well, you know, you can't get out of there. You can't buy it till you get like, you know, $5 worth of stuff. And it's silly, but it's like, he basically said, hey, you don't have to make these every PDF $5. You can make smaller ones, charge less, and people will buy more. And, you know, like I said, it sounds silly now, but at that time it was revolutionary. You know, but no one was doing that. And then that started, and I think that kind of opened the floodgates. And the moment I think that really made the legitimacy of PDS is when Monty Cook released a book of Eldritch Might. He released that book, I think it was 2004-ish. And, you know, that book sold like hotcakes. And, you know, if my memory is even right, I think he sold 1,000 copies of that PDF. And he did 3 versions of that book. And I think the PDF he sold for that was maybe $4 or $5. So, you know, there was money to be made in PDFs. There still is. But a lot of people still didn't believe it. They did, oh, those numbers are not right. It's not possible. And so you had a lot of people poo-pooing it for a long time. And, you know, now you look at it, everybody does a PDF. You know, there isn't a company out there who's not doing a PDF first.
They're done now by, so larger companies are doing them as a way to, is it a preview or to whet the appetite for upcoming printed products, or are they supplemental? Or
it's sometimes both. Sometimes people use it as, like, for a great example, Green Ronin has always been pretty much on the forefront of PDF large companies doing this. And they initially started as, you know, giving away free stuff as PDFs just to see, get you interested. Mutants and Mastermind was a prime example. They got a lot of people interested on that, on a 4-piece PDF they did. And it was like, oh, this is great. So this is the game. Oh, great. I totally understand it. Now I know how to play it. I can't wait to get it. So they started that kind of thing. And they started selling PDFs, I think probably one of the first companies to really get into it, you know, full-fledged. But most what happens, the problem that happens with a lot of larger companies, they get stuck in the concept of how much it should cost. Fundamentally, in my heart of hearts, I don't believe a PDF should cost more than $10, $11, $12 tops. And that's like the top of the top of the line stuff. But so many people will get like a regular book and they say, okay, I'm going to sell the PDF. The regular book's $40. I'm going to sell the PDF for $20 because that's reasonable. And I'm always like, but you don't have to print it. It's all digital. You can update it anytime you want to. Why do you need to charge that much? You could charge $5, $10. People are still going to buy it. At $20, that seems a lot for a digital product to me.
Yeah, I agree. I don't know. There's just something about the not tangible nature of it, maybe.
Yeah, and you know, and there is a downside to PDFs. I'm not gonna make it all rosy and perfect. There are people who steal your PDFs and put them online at BitTorrent sites, and I've sent lots of cease and desists for people doing that. And I used to hunt them down, you know, religiously, but then I got to a point saying, you know, this is silly. You know, the people who like my stuff buy my stuff. The people who are going to steal it, if they steal it and they see something they like, they may buy something in the future. You know, I think the best way to think of it is advertising. And that's really the smart way to go about it, because some people get caught in the whole, well, I lost a customer. And it's like, no, you really didn't. Because if the person was really interested, they're going to give you the money. If they're not, they're not. So, you know, don't worry about it. It's not money lost. It's just accept it and keep moving. Keep focusing on your customers. Make them happy. Do everything you can to make them happy. They'll keep you, you know, very happy for the rest of your life.
Well, you know, you were talking about those rising prices. You know, I've noticed that in the ebook world as well. I mean, it used to be you could get an ebook pretty cheap, and then now I just see the prices rising and rising and rising.
Yeah, and it's, for me, it's a little bit of a combination of they've got to pay a higher percentage to the Amazons and the ebook dealers. But I feel that people are going to start, you know, moving away from them. I mean, you get to a large enough, I mean, if you're Stephen King, Stephen King could right now put together a small book, you know, maybe 100,000 words, and release 10,000 words every week online for free. And then at the end of it, collect it all as a PDF or an ebook or whatever, and sell it. It'd still make millions. Because there's a different kind of mindset online with PDFs and that kind of ebooks. You'll read it for free at the website, but you'll want to buy the thing to support the person. And since you give first, if you are the giver first, you kind of guilt people into buying stuff. Plus there's no, price is a friction. Price is a massive friction to stop people from buying. Hey, this is a great book. I love looking at it. Oh, it's $14. I can't afford it. I won't pick it up. Hey, it's a great piece of a book and it's free and I can look at it before I bought it. Oh, this is awesome. I wonder if the rest of the book is that good. I'll spend the $14 to get it now.
Makes sense.
So, I mean, a lot of publishers are fearful of that. They're fearful of, like, what if people take my stuff and give it away? Well, then if everybody knows who your name is, they're going to find your stuff and they're going to pay you for it. Because if it's awesome, people buy awesome stuff. People always support awesome stuff. I mean, all you got to do is look at Joss Whedon. You know, Joss Whedon, you could say truthfully, got screwed by Hollywood, worked on a failed movie, then got a TV show, showed how much he loved his fans, and then basically got, what, 5 or 6 shows out of that, plus got to direct the Avengers and become one of the second director ever to basically have a movie go through $1 billion. You know, that's not a bad deal.
Not at all.
You know, hey, I mean, it's like he's to the point now, he can do any project he wants and someone's going to fund him because he can say, hey, I did the Avengers movie. Did you happen to see it? Of course you saw it. You know, $1 billion. $1 billion is a lot of money for a movie.
No question.
I guess I'm the anti-pirate because for me, what I do is I go out, if I have a role-playing product I'm curious about, I'll buy the PDF as, you know, just kind of a cheap teaser or, you know, just to look into the whole thing. And then if I like it, I'm like, I want the hard copy now.
And I think that's happened more and more now that printing prices have gotten down so low too, because, you know, when I did my first role-playing game, I did a smaller print run. And I think the books were costing me like, it was a black and white, and the books cost me $5 or $6 a book to print. And now those same books, I can easily get them printed for like $2.50 a piece.
So what happened there? Why are they now cheaper?
Because the technology has gotten so much better. I mean, I'm a lot of people know this, but in my real life, I'm a graphic designer. I've been graphic designing since 1993. The changes in graphic design in the last 20 years have been amazingly revolutionary. And people think it's amazing. It's like you can find Photoshop in mostly anybody's computer now. It's become a generic thing. People use it as a verb. Oh, I Photoshopped that. You know, 15 years ago, Photoshop was a high-end program that if you wanted to buy, it was going to cost you about $650 and it was going to be painful and you had to learn it. And then you had to use those skills to make books. And then you had to learn, at that time it was PageMaker and there was Quark. You had to learn all that stuff. And that was another $780 program. And then if you want to do drawing, you had to get Illustrator. And that's another $800 program. So you're talking a ton of money prevented a lot of people from doing it. And a lot of people tried to steal the software to learn it. And it was still too expensive. But now it's, I mean, you can get every program that Adobe sells on your computer through the cloud for as low as $50 a month. And, you know, I still hear people complain about that. Oh, it's $50. I'm like, shut up. Shut up. I'm like, you are making your salary on this. You're complaining about $50 a month? Shut up. So the technology has curved this in such a great way that if you get a little bit of experience and a little bit of knowledge, you can make your own books. I mean, I do all my stuff in my bed. Well, like my office, as I call it. You know, it's me and a computer. I'll design books. I'll get them done. I'll mock them up. I'll send them off to the printer. The printer will send me a digital copy. I'll look at it, see what the problems are, fix the problems, send it back to him. Send me another proof. Boom. We're talking, you know, this stuff used to take months and months and months to do, but now you can do it in hours and days. So the money aspect of it is easily huge.
Sounds like these people complaining about the price have no idea just how much productivity, how much power is at their fingertips thanks to the software.
Oh yeah. They don't. I mean, well, let me give you a really quick example. I've always told this story. This is, I tell people, if you want to be really rich and famous in PDFs, this is the way to do it. It works for everybody. The company called Legendary Games just stopped doing what I told them to do because I think let me explain to you what you do and you'll understand why. If you want to be really successful in PDFs, this is it. All you got to do is release one PDF every week and do it for as long as you can. And the PDFs don't have to be long. They can be like 1-page, 2-page PDFs. You put a reasonable price, you know, 50 cents, 99 cents, or even, you know, pay whatever you want, that kind of thing. And just put it out there, but release a product every week. Within 40 weeks, you're going to have 40 products. At that time, some of the products are going to overlap. You can combine them together and make printed books out of them. And if that is, and they were talking like, you know, if it's two pages per each one, do 20 of them, that's a 40-page book. You can sell that for $14 as a printed product. No one will blink an eye to that. The product will probably cost you, what, maybe a buck or two? Maybe a buck to print at that level. You're going to sell it at 14. If you sell it direct, you don't have to put in a cut for anybody else. You got to minus the printing. So you figure with all your input of work put in there, if you're using stock art to save some money, let's say it costs you $3 a book to make. You sell it for $12. You make $9.
Nice.
You know, that's it. That's it. But every week you have to release something. Now here's the downside to that. I'll get to a point where you have so many products. It's difficult for you to keep repeating the one a week. Legendary Games, who I know pretty well, they're friends of mine, they were doing a weekly release of their Mythic stuff. They were big fans of Mythic for Pathfinder. They did a lot of support for that. They just released their 80th product for Mythic, and like 80th or 83rd, and they said, we're not going to be doing it anymore. We're going to be doing some other stuff. Because it's a hard schedule to keep up.
Yeah, you've got, you build a, how do I put this? You paint yourself into a corner where there's a lot of work to be done to keep up the pace, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then you'll farm out a lot of stuff and you'll get stuff in advance. But at the same point, you know, you can keep, but if we're talking two or three pages, because typically a 1,000-word page equals to about a 1.5 page laid out. So you figure you write 2,000 words, that's three pages. You pay somebody, you know, you pay them a starting wage. A starting wage for this stuff, you know, we're talking a cent a word.
Hmm.
You know, it's not a lot of money, but it's $20. And there are tons of guys who are looking to break in, and they'll be more than happy to do it for a dollar. You know, if you pay them, that's another thing, payment. I pay the second we get the stuff done from you. I don't wait 3 months. I don't wait till publishing. That's stupid. Once you turn your stuff in, you're getting paid by me.
So properly pay your writers.
I mean, if you can pay them the second they turn it in, they'll work harder for you because they know once they turn it in, they're going to get paid. They don't have to wait 5, 6, 10 months to get paid. I know people who worked on projects that never got their money because the company went under. You know, it's like, oh, they've got my work and they went under, so I can't even use it. So what do I do? Well, I've just wasted writing, you know, 10,000, 20,000 words.
How do you know, by the way, speaking of the product, you know, before you even get to, you know, putting out the word that you want somebody to create something for you, how do you arrive at the what? Like, how do you know, come up with the ideas, I guess is what I'm asking.
For me, it was very simple. I'm the only person in the RPG industry who built his company from the ground up and have never worked for a major company.
Ah.
You know, I found no need to work for a major company. A lot of them were companies I would like to work for, but then hearing stories from friends and learning, like I said, my first game was Haven City of Violence. I wanted to do a crime-driven RPG, modern gunplay, very John Woo, very Sin City, lots of action, that kind of thing. And there's no one going to do something like that. You know, there's no company would have done something like that. And I was inspired by TSR's Top Secret. So I wanted initially to do a spy game and then developed into what Haven was. And I did that for damn near 10 years. And then out of that, I said, oh, I want to do a fantasy setting. But I want to do a fantasy setting without elves or dwarves or – I was like, they're just stupid races. You know, it's like, oh, I'm an elf. I'm tall and thin. Oh, I'm a dwarf. I'm short and stubby, and I live underground. It's like, what? That's not what a real race is. Races are distinctly different. They look different. So I did Neo Exodus. And, you know, I really – pushed it in a very different fantasy setting way. And most people have described it kind of like it's very He-Man, Thundercats inspired, kind of that little feel. You know, it's fantasy, but it's not fantasy fantasy. It's more like science fantasy. Mm. So, you know, I did a lot of that. And personally, I think the problem with when you have a major company, because you can't really get the niches you'd like to go into, you have to stick to what's bland and what's kind of boring. You know, the last setting I did was Obsidian Apocalypse. And basically, 110%, it is a mashup of TSR's Dark Sun and TSR's Ravenloft. You know, and I knew those were going to sell because they're popular niche ones and people like them. But they were always like, kind of like, it's vampires. The vampires are like this. And I thought that was kind of silly. And then Dark Sun was post-apocalyptic, but it really wasn't post-apocalyptic. It was more like, can you survive long enough to get some water? And who wants to play that kind of game?
Yeah.
So I went for more of the, let's make it survival horror, because that's really what we want to do. Survival horror, think zombies, think end of the world, think it's horrible, this sucks, we need to do something, we need to survive, and we got to watch out for these undead things attacking us. I thought that at least made some interest. And, you know, we did that Kickstarter, and we raised, it was like $11,000 on that one. And then when we did the Neo Exodus update, because I wanted to add new art to it and add some more stuff to it, because the original book was nice, but it wasn't as nice as I really wanted it, we raised, $14,000 on that one.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, you know, it's out there if you spend time building the fan base before you do the Kickstarter. Because what people did, and this is stupid, and I don't think people understood this, but now they do. Gare Skarka is a prime example. He did one called Far East. And that was one of the first Kickstarters I saw. When he did his first Kickstarter, he raised 50 grand. And it's like, dude, 50 grand is impressive. We're talking, this is 50 grand 4 years ago. So everybody then tried to jump in and try to do it and ask for crazy amounts, but they didn't spend time building their fan base before they did that. And Gareth did. Gareth had always had a good fan base that loved him and supported him. And, you know, he did that, and that was smart. And when I attempted my first time with Kickstarter, it didn't work out well. I did three Kickstarters before one finally hit. And the first three were just failures, just absolute failures. And I thought they were awesome, but no one cared. No one cared. They're horrible ideas. They're stupid. I didn't do it right. And I deserved it. I deserved not to get any money.
That's refreshingly frank.
Well, no, it's true. It's the truth. I mean, I did what I thought was best at the moment. I thought, of course, I'll show up. Of course they'll give me money. I'm Lewis Porter Jr. That's the dumbest thing you could ever think. You know, spend the time, put the time in before. Gary Vanderchuk, he's a well-known, social media guy. He had a company called Line TV, and now he's done a lot of stuff online. And he goes by the nickname Gary V. He says, when do you start promoting your book to sell? A year before you sell it. Because most people don't do that. They wait till the book's done and I'm ready to sell it. What'd you do that year before? You should have been talking it up. You should have been showing stuff around. You've been showing glimpses of it. Get people interested. Get them fired up. So when you have the book, you've already got the fans there wanting it, and you want to take their money, and they'll be willing to give it to you.
So if I had to sum up the 3 points you made, it would be come up with ideas based on what you would like maybe as a player, because that sounds like
always pick things you want to always pick things that you want to play in your games.
Okay, that's you know, one.
Yeah.
Thing two would be prepared for failure if other people don't share your enthusiasm and just roll with it and move on.
That's it. Expect to fail. Expect to fail badly.
Okay. And thing three, get behind your idea, boost it, get it out there, promote it.
You know, it's the best, smartest thing you can do for yourself in the long, long term. It's going to help you out more than you even understand. Okay. For example, I'm looking at the BattleTech Kickstarter right now. I'm just watching it. And every few seconds, they get another backer and the price ticks up. Now, right now, they're at like $1.1 million. They've got 33 days to go. If they follow a standard, curve like they're supposed to, they're going to spend probably the next 30 days, maybe raising like $500,000, maybe even $750,000. Then the last 3 days, they're going to clock up probably another million, maybe a million and a half. Because it always happens that way. First day, it's a big high. You go through the big lull for the next whatever amount in the middle part is. And then the last 3 days is when you shoot up and you make some more money. Now, the gimmick is, for all you people who want to learn Kickstarter, the real gimmick is, you gotta have a lot of people start or have a cool idea that people come back. It's to get them in that lull period. How to get them excited during the lull. And, you know, there's a guy right now doing, It's for Pathfinder. It's a campaign setting. Hold on, let me actually look at, I can tell you guys. It's Northern Crown. That was it. They did it for Pathfinder. It was a game in 3.5. I loved it in 3.5. They updated. They said they're going to be doing it for Pathfinder. I was like, oh, great. That sounds like a great idea. They only had to raise $1,500. They had like 40 days to do it. They only wound up raising $2,300 and $22. They have 103 backers, and I'm not one of them. Now, you're all going to say, well, I thought you liked the game. Why didn't you back it? I think the promotion on it stunk. I don't think they told anyone about it. I don't think I ever saw even a simple ad on at paizo.com, which makes no sense to me at all. I know I didn't see one in RPG.net. They never really sent out any press releases. You got a whopping 3 different levels of rewards. This should have been easily a $10,000 book. This could have easily raised that, easily. But, you know, they didn't care about it. They saw they made an easy amount. $1,500 should be very easy to make. You should easily be able to get $1,500. That's very easy. That's not unrealistic. That's anybody in the sound of my voice can hear this, can raise $1,500. $5,000 might be a little more difficult. $10,000 might be a little more difficult. But $1,500, that should be a first day, no problem, don't even blink.
Speaking of earning Kickstarter, by the way, there's a website called KickTracker.
Yep, don't believe it.
Don't.
According to them, they're trending that it's gonna, that BattleTech's gonna do 19 million.
Don't believe that thing. You'll learn that quickly. You watch a couple Kickstarters and you get on KickTracker, you think, this is how it's gonna go. No, every Kickstarter does the exact same thing. Shoots up, curves down the middle, and then shoots back up at the end. That is how it looks. That is the graph. And if you watch KickTrack, you will go crazy because it starts out great and then stuff starts slowing. And when it starts slowing, you think that you're losing money. But in reality, you've already made your money on the first day. All you're doing is basically adding more to it. And people get crazy on it. I know I did. I watched, oh good Lord, my first real Kickstarter when I was doing a free RPG day product. We were only looking to raise $5,000. I got, it was $1,500. We got past the 1500. I was like, woo, great. We got to like 4000 and it started coming down on KickTrack. And I got all crazy like, oh my God, we're losing money. We got to do something. We got to get people out there. We got to talk it up. And it's like, you watch those things. They're not good for you to watch. They're good for, after it's all done, you can take a look and get a perspective and see where things popped and check what your ads did. But if you're watching at the same time, it's like, it's not good for you. It's not good. Not good. Not good.
So purely for entertainment value.
Yeah. I mean, you'll enjoy it. It'll be fun. But if you watch it seriously, you'll start thinking crazy thoughts. Because if you've got a great idea and it's really doing very well, it's a great example. We'll do Monty Cook. Monty Cook did his, what's the first one he did? Numenera.
Yeah.
He only asked for a little bit of money. And it's like, okay, this is not really a lot of money. And it's not a bad thing. And he wound up getting, I think it was 10 times as much or 15 times. Yeah, Numenera. Let me look it right here. I always go back and look at this stuff after it's all done. It's interesting. He asked for 20,000. He raised $500,000.
Wow. Not
right.
Huge.
Now he's Monty Cook. Him raising $500,000 does not surprise me because he's Monty Cook. He's worked with TSR. He's worked with WotC. His name was on 3.5. He built a fan base. People liked him. He's known in the industry, and he's also known outside the industry, like the video game industry. So, he got himself $500,000 to put together a book that I'm willing to bet you was already done by the time he had this thing ready to go. All he was just looking for ways to print it and save money, and this is what helped him do. And if you figure out, realistically, let's just suppose to print, write, do the art, everything, cost him half the money. He still had $250,000 he had to put in his pocket. Oh, I'm sorry. Minus the 10% from Kickstarter and Amazon. So he only had, I'm sorry, he, and maybe some other stuff. So let's say he only had $200,000 to put in his back pocket as profit.
Poor guy. Wow.
Oh, and then by the way, he gets to sell more copies of the book. Because you remember, he bought all these copies of the book to get all of his people who wanted it. Plus the people who didn't get into the Kickstarter. They get to buy it after for the full price. Cha-ching.
Wow. So, unofficial tip number 4, maybe have your stuff done in advance
Or be Monty Cook.
It's not really Kickstarter, it's Kick Finisher. But once if you're done and you have it paid for, I'm gonna tell you all you guys these secrets so everybody will know, and it's not really a big secret once you get into it. But if you're doing Kickstarter, you got the book done. Suppose your book is not to take 10 chapters. You tell everybody on the Kickstarter, you're going to give them the first 6 chapters in the book. The other 4 chapters, you save as add-ons to stuff that you're going to add to the book. But you've already written them, so they're really not even add-ons. But people will feel they're add-ons. But they're like, oh, I'm adding something to it. Well, you're kind of not. You've already had it prepared. You knew you were going to do that. You add another chapter. Oh, that's kind of cool. You add another chapter. Oh, that's kind of cool. Now the book has grown in size. But in reality, you've already prepared for that. You knew that from day one. So now the book reaches the original size of the book. Say, suppose you asked for $2,000, you got 8. Now you pay for actually the real cost of what the book really cost you. Ta-da! You've got the book paid for. Now you can add on other stuff if you want to. You're like, okay, let's do a little 5,000 word thing about XYZ. You pay a guy, you can pay a guy 5 cents a word, 10,000 words. Boom. $500 for that. 10,000 word thing is going to cost you about, it'd be 15 pages altogether. So that's about 4 pages of art. You charge somebody art, $200 a page. That's another $800. So altogether for about $1,300, you get another source book that you can add to your thing, or you can sell separately. It's its own thing and just add it to the Kickstarter as a prize. Plus you sell it directly to people and it's connected to the book. So now you have another product for it and you keep adding products like that. And that's it.
Kick finisher. I thought that was not to be pedantic or anything here, but I thought that was like, what's the word I'm looking for? Brian, maybe you help me out here. I thought Kickstarter, didn't they have like kind of a hard on for people finishing using Kickstarter or something like that?
Once upon a time, they didn't really care for it, and now they've just kind of like, I don't know, it's most of their business. They make the money off of it. They don't care.
Right. Plus, here's the best part. You've already got the book done. So the Kickstarter ends. You get the stuff together. You get your other stuff you added on. Instead of it being a year later or 2 years later, 6 months later, you release the product to the people. And you know what people do after you release the product after 6 months of doing it and saying like that? Here's the first word to say, oh my God, thank you. I really appreciate you doing this. On top of that, if you show them what you're doing on the book as it's developing, they love you even more.
Oh, wow.
I think this was like the evolution of their idea.
Yeah, Kickstarter started, it sounded like a crazy idea when they started, but when you really got down and thought about it, it's really about interacting with your fans on a really personal level. And if you really do it really well and you're honest with them and you tell them the problems you're having, you tell them what you're doing right, what you're doing wrong, you show them artwork. I'm very big on showing artwork. I like showing artwork. So it's like you show them tons of artwork, they get excited about the product. The product comes out, they get it in their hands, and then they love it. And then they buy your other stuff because they supported you already. Now here's where it gets really, really interesting. If the product's really good, or if the product's okay, they're really good, they're going to tell their friends about it. They want to play it. They'll play one around with the setting and they're like, okay, here's the thing I want to play. Try it out. Oh, that was totally fun. I really enjoyed that. Hey, what's that game? I got to buy some stuff for it. They'll go online. They'll look for it. They'll find the PDFs. They'll buy it for a buck or two. So there's, a little bit of fear. Don't have to worry about it. Once you realize the products are good, they'll start buying more in bulk, and now you have a new customer.
Mm.
Now, here's where it gets even more fun. You're going to do another Kickstarter. We're doing our Kickstarter in February. We're doing it as a crossover event with all the third-party publishers who work for Pathfinder. And I've already signed, I think, 7 or 8 of them to do add-on products with this Kickstarter. And basically, the best way to describe it is we're doing Crisis on Infinite Earths, plus the Ultimate Galactus story.
Cool.
Yeah, it does sound awesome. Yeah.
Right. If you're a comic book fan, you know what that means. So you're like, well, I got to check that out. Well, we're giving you a free prequel on Black Friday. You like the free prequel? Oh, here's the Kickstarter starting in February. Save some money. Save $20. You can get the PDF or save. If you want to get the whole big thing, it's $140. But $20 will get you the PDF and all the cool stuff attached to it. Or $25. Ta-da. And now you've built your fan base. And now your fan base will be supporting you when it comes February.
That's awesome.
Yep. I mean, that's it. That's it. That's 90% of it right there.
So, Cam, you're hard at work on a game, as you mentioned during your update.
Mm-hmm.
You've feeling some takeaways here in this discussion for you? Or?
No, absolutely. Definitely food for thought. I mean, I like the kick finisher thing. That's sort of, like you said, I think sort of the worst kept secret of Kickstarter.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what all these big companies, indie games, IndyCar, all the big companies, that's basically what they're doing. They have everything already set up and ready to go. They're just basically using it to just make money,
it also gauge interest. That's something that a lot of people do because you could fail.
Right.
Failing a Kickstarter, it also tells you maybe you ask for too much money. Maybe there's not enough interest. Because Cam, I heard you're going to Metatopia.
Yep.
a lot of people I know are going, that's become the new hidden gem. That's the South by Southwest for gamers. I've been heard of that like that. And people keep asking me, you should go. And I'm like, I'm trying to, but I've got a son, so it's kind of difficult. I tell you, if I was you right now, is it a card game or board game or an RPG?
Yeah, it's a light strategy card game. 28 cards.
Okay. Have you already got your decks made by Drive-Thru RPG?
No. I mean, it's still a very, very loose prototype.
Then you should get your cards made by Drive-Thru RPG.
Yep.
That will cost you about 19 cents a card.
Okay.
You can get together. You can make like 4 prototype decks. Even if it's raw, and it's still a card deck, and it looks like it's real. So you've already made – it's already one step ahead of 90% of the people. Mm-hmm. Because people talk about card games. They don't have anything to show. You got something to show. Like, here you go. Here's my card deck. Oh, where'd you get them from? Drive-Thru RPG Now. It's really cheap. It doesn't cost you a lot. I mean, a lot of people know that we do spell decks. We did spell decks for Pathfinder, and we did them through RPG Now. You know, they don't cost – I did the work to make some, but they really don't cost me anything to make. It's money coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, card games, basically the same way. If I was you and you knew – say if you needed an extra $1,000, do a Kickstarter. And then, like, you know, when you reach $1,000, I'm going to add 6 more cards if you reach 2,000. I'm going to add 6 more cards if you reach 3,000. And we're going to do custom cards with your faces on them.
Right.
We'll use custom cards where you get to name the card. That kind of stuff sells like hotcakes. I had 10 guys give me extra money because they wanted to have their faces in my book. And their faces are in my book. Some are very important VIPs. Some are some NPCs. But their faces are in the book as templates, I mean, as characters for the setting.
Yeah, I've been hooked into that on a couple times on board games on Kickstarter.
And it's a great little one, and it's a great way to get people involved and get them talking about your game. Because once, think about it, you see your face on a game, what are you going to say? Hey, that's me. Did you see me? I'm in this book. They're going to show everybody their mother, which is going to just have people more people see your product, and that's a great way to go.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good idea. And then I'm glad, you know, it's, maybe this is, you know, divine intervention here, but I've been looking to get, you know, some decks made up for Metatopia and for a couple of other cons that I'm going to be going to and meeting with, you know, some publishers at. So, yeah, I think it'll go a long way in, you know, looking professional and stuff to have a nice few prototype decks made up.
Yeah, let me pimp on again. It's Drive Through Cards. It's actually Drive Through RPG, RPG Now. That's all one big family. But Drive Through Cards, and they do. Oh, before I forget, they don't just do playing card size. They do up to the largest size. I believe is 12 inches by 18 inches, and they also do 8.5 by 11. You know, that would fit. You know, that would be a nice 4-panel GM screen that you could do stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
or a little mat to have you could play on.
Yeah. I'm sure you guys do like magic size, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, like I said, there's so many ways to make money in this industry, but you really got to sit down and think about, you know, how do I do it right? How do I do it effectively? And most importantly, how do I not lose a lot of money?
Mm-hmm. Do you guys, how's the design? Is it just upload your own design type thing, or is there an interactive type?
You'll basically design it in InDesign or whatever layout program, you upload it as a PDF. You send them a PDF, they give you the measurements, what you need, you upload it to them, they'll do the stuff, they'll print them out to you, they'll send them to you. They'll even put them in, I got mine in these hard cases that cost $1 extra. And you can get them shrink wrapped or you can get them just in the hard cases. And people can see professionally made cards, you hand them over like, here you go. And that's the cool thing. Once they see it as like that and it's real, that's your credibility shoots all the way up.
Mm-hmm. What's the turnaround time typically?
I got mine extremely quick. It was like, you know, within 2 weeks.
Okay.
Hey, Cam, remind me, tomorrow I'll show you a sample. I got the Fate RPG deck.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Cool.
And you'll be like, yeah, this is the way to go for prototyping people. You'll probably have to put prototype on the card or people are going to think it's your actual professional product.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's a great way just to help you out in the long run because – you know, talking about a game is really a lot of fun, but if you can get it in their hands, once they touch it, you got them. You got them.
Yeah. Very cool.
Which when you think about it for, in a way, it makes it a challenge for RPGs.
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you know, well, compared to like board games and card games where it's very tactile, you've got like a book.
Oh.
I think for some people that magic doesn't work.
Are you kidding? Oh,
you disagree? You disagree? Go on, sir. Go on, sir.
Let me give you a little thought of thing. Okay. Here's a cool deck. Okay, spell decks is something I did. I stole it from an idea from some friends of mine. They made it for 3.5. it didn't work out exactly the way you wanted to, but I knew it was a good idea when I heard it. So I knew when PDFs were coming out doing it, I knew that's something I wanted to do. That's something I did. I also did weapon and equipment cards, just like Paizo did. Piece of stock art on the front, description on the back, nice looking card, put it together, boom. Add them to your PDFs at the end of the book. Doesn't cost you really anything to make them. You put them, you know, three or four cards on a sheet. They have them as a PDF. They can print them out and cut them, and now they have cards for their stuff. Once you got them used to doing that, you say, oh, by the way, here's the deck of the actual weapon you have. Wouldn't you love to have a deck where you can have different versions of it, of the same card? Of course I would. They'll buy the deck. And it didn't really cost you anything else extra. You already did the work already.
Well played. Well played.
Oh, that's the easy one. Then if you want to be really good, you do 6x6 boards, and you write them, and you basically do initiative cards on them. So this is a little tougher. You can get dry erase marker. They can write on it, use it over and over, and they sell for like, they're like 25 cents each, but you mark them up. It's like probably 45, 50 cents each. You double your money. They like using them. They love them. They'll buy some more. Yeah, the name of the game really is take something that's free and find a way to make money off of it. First thing I did for that, spell decks. Then feat cards. It's free. The OGL stuff is free and it's available. Anybody can use it. 100% free. The formatting is what makes it different. And people are more than happy to pay you for stuff that helps save them time in a game. But you go to a guy and say, okay, you get these 14 spells out of the book where you gotta keep flipping back and forth. Well, here's these 14 cards, you can hand them. Here's your spells. There you go. And when you use a spell, you hand it to me. Ta-da, done.
That's actually pretty handy. Now that, I mean, that sounds damn convenient. I would pay for that.
See? And there you go. And now I have a customer.
yeah, seriously. Because how many times have you had gaming sessions drag on as somebody fumbles through pages, you know?
Or... Oh, my God.
The name of the game, and if anyone, this is a real secret. This is, I knew about this, but I didn't really understand this till probably a few weeks ago. The name of the game is how you can save somebody time. That's the big winner.
Convenience always costs you.
As I said, time is the one thing that we all have, and we only get a limited amount of it. Here's a joke that I learned from Gary Vee. This is how precious our time is now. How often do you guys get upset when somebody calls you on the phone?
Yeah.
Right. Now, why is that?
That's time-consuming. It takes your time.
It's my time. Yeah. You're using my time. This is my time. People get, see what? The concept of someone else talking to you gets you upset because they're taking your time. How crazy does that sound?
But it makes sense.
You're right. Yeah. So once you figure that part out, figure out how you can save people time in gaming. Saving people time in gaming and how it goes about will make you money. That's it. That's the name of the game.
Brilliant. I never really considered it, but it makes a lot of sense, especially if you got some rules lawyers and you're...
Oh, I was saying, why does Lone Wolf Games do so well in software? You know, making a character takes how long in Pathfinder or D&D? You know, 25 minutes, maybe an hour sometimes? What if I can do it in 5 minutes? How much time does that save me? Jeez, I'd love to do that. I'd pay for that. And people do.
Yeah, sure. Of course they do. Wow. I never even considered it, but it did make sense.
I've got a little, in-depth entrepreneur question. Because I know that for a while you told me, all the money you were making wasn't profit. It was non-profit. Oh. You were putting it right back into the company. What was the tipping point for you to decide that you could start partaking of the bounty?
When I was first doing it by myself, you know, all the money was all my money. So I put everything back in. So it was like, that was a smart thing to do. Where I am now, I don't work as much in the company doing the writing. I'm more on I do layout and some concept stuff, but I have people that does this stuff for me. You know, I have writers who do the writing for me and I pay them for it. I have editors who do it. I pay them for it. I have artists. I do only things I want to do because I get tired of, and this is true. Look, I've accepted. I'm not a great writer. Never going to be a great writer. Don't care if I'm a great writer. Can't put a sentence together. It doesn't make sense, but I own a publishing company that does games. There are many guys who are much smarter than me, who are more than capable of doing that job, who will be more than happy to do that job. So let them do it. You know, because most times people's egos get involved. Well, my name's not on it. Who cares? My name's on the company. That's the important part. I get to hire these guys and get to pay them, and they get a nice paycheck from me on a monthly basis, and they come work for me, and they have a great time working for me. And that's the thing. You know, and now I'm at that point of I'm making money, but I'm hiring people out to do the work for me. So I still get not as much money, but I get to hire a lot more people than I did before. You know, at one point when I was only hiring like one person or two, I've got like 8 or 9 people I'm paying monthly to do stuff.
Do you enjoy that part of it? Do you enjoy the fact that you're able to provide?
Oh yeah. Well,
opportunity like that, or
I'm in it for the business. I like gaming, but I'm in it for the business. I love the business. I think the business side of it is lacking. The serious side of it, I think people do a lot of dumb things in business, especially in role-playing games. I mean, you know, I'll give you one argument. Some people are going to probably hate me for this one, but I've said this many times before. I think people get paid too much, artistic artists I'm talking about right now, for the work that's done due to what you sell. And I'll tell people that, and I'll tell people harshly, most American artists want way too much money for me. I can't meet them. It's like, dude, I can't meet what you want. It's impossible. So what I do is I go overseas. I find a guys usually in Southeast Asia, Brazil, Chile, Argentina, where the dollar is very, very strong. He'll be more than happy to work for a rate that's probably half what the person's worked for, and sometimes even a third of that.
Mm.
You know, so it's like, it's real simple math. I can pay $600 for one page image, full color, or I can pay $200. Which one do you think I'm going to pick?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And here's the scarier part. Usually the $200 one has better artwork than the $600 one. And people have said, people have grilled me over this. They've yelled and screamed. They say I'm a scumbag for this. And I'll tell them point blank. I've been in business 15 years. I've been able to provide for a lot of people for over these 15 years. A lot of those guys have gone off to work for major companies and done it. And they knew exactly when they're dealing with me, what they got. I told them what I could afford. I paid what I could afford, and I paid it for them usually a day or two after they turned it in. You know, people who've worked for me usually work for me again and again because I give them a lot of leeway. I give them a lot of back, especially for artists. I give them a lot of background. It's like, here's all the art I want, and then you do what you do best. Because, you know, I'm even though I'm a graphic designer, even though I got 20 years experience, I never tell artists what to do. I tell them what I'd like, and they do the hard work. Because the problem is, so many people want to be, and I've said this on my own personal podcast, so many people want to be art directors and don't understand what art directing is all about.
So what's the what would be your advice then for
if you don't know anything about art directing, you want to be an art director?
Well,
easy. That one's really easy. Go look at comic book covers. Comic book covers sell comic books every month with action on them. And look at ones that are cool, look at ones that are good, look at why the placement is good, look where the logo design is, look what stuff works, look what stuff doesn't work. And if you want to use something really good, and I'm doing this right now, there's a comic book, it's X-Men 141. It's probably one of the most popular covers of all time. It's a very simple cover, has Wolverine a little bit older on the cover with Kitty Pryde behind him. And in the background, against this big wall, it's a wanted poster. And on the wanted poster has all the X-Men. And they have certain little strips of paper over some of them. Some say apprehended, some say killed. And it's a whole big piece. It's an awesome piece. And everything about the piece is right. It's X-Men 141. Go check it out. Go look at it. You look at that cover and you tell me that do you think you can do a better looking cover than that? Probably not. So go look at these comic book covers. Go through the ones. See the ones you like. See why they're popular. And then just copy them. Copy them. Get inspired by them. Get the idea from it. And then look at it and say, okay, this is what I like and this is what I don't like. And then keep doing it. And then just keep doing it with more and more covers. See what you like over time. You'll understand why this thing works better than the other thing. It's just something that will naturally happen over time.
This has nothing to do with your love of comic books, right?
I love comic books, always have, always will. But I also know that comic book artists spend a lot of time making books that have to sell. You know, they have to sell. If the cover doesn't sell the book, it's not getting picked up off the thing. That's just point blank. And comic books, you know, and I'm talking when I was a young kid, you know, 60 cents, a dollar. You would still be like, I don't know, it's a dollar. The cover sold the book.
Right, right, right.
You know, and look, I mean, look at covers of most fantasy books for role playing for stuff like that. It's usually very generic, very old, and very stiff. There's no action going on covers. It's like they're in the middle. Like one of my favorite covers of all time for RPGs is Heroes 5th Edition. It's done by George Perez, and it's great. You got Dr. Destroyer, who's got a power blast going out at the Seeker, and their version, can't remember his name now, their version of Iron Man's on the ground, been blasted, and it's an awesome cover, because it's, you know, it's the one meager guy with the katana and the pajama pants for Kung Fu going against the big high-tech guy. It's an awesome cover. But who drew it? An awesome comic book artist. You know, too many people try to be like, well, I want it to be a piece of art. Then when people see it, they can hang it up in their room. Shut up. I want it to be a piece of awesomeness that people pick up and say, oh, I got to buy this.
You know, I think also that's a big secret of RPGs people don't get into as much as they could is, you know, you could have awesome art and make a good sale out of a mediocre system.
Oh.
And you could have a great system and you'd be struggling to make sales if your art sucks.
I'll tell you right now, spend more money on the art than you do on the writing.
Ugh, you're wounding me, man. You're wounding
me. I'll tell you why. Every day of the week, art sells. Because no one says this. Oh, I looked across the room and I saw this girl and she looked smart. No one says that. No one. They say, I looked across the room and that girl was, visual. We're all visual creatures. Stick to what we know. Do the cool visual thing. You want to sell the sizzle, not the steak. If it looks cool, they're going to pick it up. If it doesn't look cool, they're not going to pick it up. Things must look cool for people to pick them up. You know, just look at, I'm sure I can tell you all to look at your bookshelf right now and look over your RPGs and remember, and I bet you can tell what covers they are. If the books are sideways, you already know what covers are the best covers. You know, like, oh, this is a great cover. This is a great cover. This one, not so much, but this is a great cover. Because you know, the great ones always stick out.
Exactly.
Yeah. And to the artist, regardless of their talent, you think that they should perhaps be a little more competitive with their brethren overseas if their prices are...
If you're good, you don't have to worry about what I'm saying because you're going to get higher. That's just point blank. For some guys who are just awesomely talented will get work. There's some guys who are consistent who will get work. Working with me is very, very simple. This is what I'd like. This is what I'm doing. Here's what I'm going to give you for it. If you like that, we can work together. If you can't, we won't.
So I guess you see yourself as the Roger Corman of RPGs.
No, I think I'm the guy who just is going to tell you the honest truth. Because too many people romanticize the work we do. And here's the problem. It's work. It's actual legitimate work. What means there's going to be some sweat involved. And it's not going to be pretty. And I tell people, I'm sorry. If you only sell me 4 copies of a book, how good is your art? If you're an artist and your job is to sell the book and your art doesn't help sell the book, what have you done? And then people are like, well, that's stupid. It must be, you're the publisher. It's your job to sell the book. Yes, it is my job to sell the book, but the artwork's on the book to help sell it. Because if I didn't need to do that, all my covers would be white with a title and you'd buy them in the stores because they're awesome. But people don't do that. People look at the cover, they flip open the book, they see the artwork, they see if everything looks kind of cool, and then they buy.
Mm.
You know, most people don't buy sight unseen. You know, and if they do, and they hate it, they're going to tell everybody how much it sucks. Or even worse, you open up a book and it has bad artwork. Great cover, bad artwork. What do we all say to that? Ugh. You feel offended. You know, oh, I spent my money on this. The cover was great, but oh, this art sucks.
Not consistent with, yeah, what's behind it. Sure, sure.
Right. And that will kill you as a business person and just in general because it is kind of the bait and switch.
Absolutely.
You know, but you know, like I said, when it comes to the business side of this, I'm very aggressive. And you know, I tell people, it's like, look, you don't have to like me. We're not dating. No, not dating. I've already had a wife. Thanks. I'm in this for a business understanding of how we can make more money, become more profitable, expand ourselves out of the small little box we put ourselves in. Because I mean, there are tons of really smart, innovative guys doing really awesome, innovative things in an industry that really has not done its best to draw new players to it.
You know, one of my pet peeve taglines is for a role-playing company?
What's that?
For gamers by gamers. I hate that.
But, you know, you hate it, but it's a great way to get people who are hardcore gamers. If you said, you know, for video games, for video game players, of course, you're trying to get those people excited. And that's just marketing speak. What it really means is that we found some cheesy lines. We hope you fall for this. Please buy our stuff.
Well, for me, it just seems like a lot of those guys who kind of go for that are gamers first, and they don't focus on the business end. And then they wonder why they're flailing around.
But those guys, some of those guys don't know any better. Some of those guys, there's tons of new guys always coming into, I'm going to be a new publisher and I'm going to do new stuff. And I can tell you what the first couple of products are going to be. This is for your Pathfinder, but it's always the same. I'm going to do some more cool feats for races that I've always wanted to see. Sad part is they haven't checked any other third party publishers, and they usually are copying somebody's stuff. They don't realize it because that happens all the time. They'll build another class and they go, I want a new class because those classes suck. They pick a class that's overpowered, and that's just them beating on people. So it's like not even fun. Rarely people do adventures, because adventures are very, very tough and tough to do right. And if you do it really right, it's very expensive. And you may not make your money back. And usually you don't. And then after about two or three products, you lost a couple $100. And they can't figure out how this really works. They don't understand the whole publishing thing. They don't understand the whole art thing. They don't understand the writing thing. All they want to do is be a guy with their name on a product, and then they go out of business. Now, when that happens, here's where it can get really ruthless and crazy. And this is something that people don't usually talk about, but, you know, I'll tell you guys. A lot of people put all their content as open content, so they can just put it out, people can use it, whatever. Some people will go back through the content that's open content, grab it all, change a couple things, put it in their book, you know, connect it to the open gaming license like they're supposed to. But the recycling old content. And it's free. Remember I talked about free and then sell it? This is that moment.
Well, don't forget they're also adding awesome art.
Yeah, well, I mean, but you can get stock art. You can get stock art cheap. You can get stock art for me from Storm Cook, who's done tons of work for Hero Games and Champions. You can buy an art book I just released. It's $13. You get seven pieces of art. $2 per piece of color art.
Not too shabby.
You know, boom, and it's fantasy. And he's done probably 30 of these. You know, they're $10 a pop. You can't say no to $10 art. You just can't. It's too cheap, it's perfect, and you need stock art. Saves you money. And if you write it yourself, you don't have to pay anybody. You're just paying for the stock art. So you write 2,000 words plus $9 stock art, you got a product that you got to sell for $9. For $9, you sell it 99 cents, you get 66 cents on that. You sell 15 of them, you break even. You should be able to sell 15 with a good cover. What you already have is you got the art. And then next time you say, this is going really well, and say if you make $50 on it. You make $50 on it? Great. Take $20 out, take the other 30 to cover the cost of making it, and whatever little profit you have over, you put that in your pocket. You take that $20 you had, you go hire a writer who'll write 2,000 words for a cent a word, and there's people out there who'll do it. Don't kid yourself. There are people who'll be more than happy to do it. Boom, you pay him his $20, you use some of the stock art you didn't use, boom, you got another product. And you sell $50 worth. Take $20 out, take $30 for yourself, and you can bring your keep. And that's it. There's the plan. Ta-da.
I don't think I understand the stock art. You can buy it because of the OGL and reuse the art?
You can buy, there are artists who give people the right to use their art on projects, whatever it is. It's the artwork costs X of dollars. They have X amount of pieces of art. You buy it and you use it.
Yeah, so that takes care of your art need.
Yep. And you can buy black and white, color, 3D, computer done, hand drawn. You can get any kind of art you want nowadays. I was one of the first guys who did black and white stock art. And when I first did it, people cursed me out. They told me, oh, you're horrible. You're a scumbag. You're stealing from artists. Within 3 years, everybody and their mother was doing it.
It's just not original. Like, that's the only... Someone else can use it too.
Yep, and I had a series that I was doing with this one artist who was doing superhero stuff, and I was doing superhero products at the same time. So I was basically getting free artwork for myself. I then was selling the stock art to other people that were using in their books. So people would see their books, they thought they were belong with my book because they thought the art were similar. And I'm like, no, we're just using stock art. It's no big deal. But you should check out their books and my books because they're really good book. Look at this art. The art makes it awesome. Check it out. So I use the art to help sell their books, which in turn helps sell my books.
Wow.
A little inadvertent cross marketing, it sounds like.
Yeah, and people love it because it's like, oh, your art's awesome. When are you getting some more art like this? I'd love to buy some more from you. Can you get me some more artists? Who are these guys who are doing the artwork? And then these artists all of a sudden get people asking about, well, you're going to do an original piece for me? Sure, here's my prices for an original piece. Okay, I got your other stuff, so I know it's worth it because they've already made money on it. So they pay them for the original price, and they make even more money.
Well, here's my dilemma, and it moves more into like the larger realm. I mean, obviously, if I'm doing my own thing, everything you're saying makes absolute sense, and it's sort of something I've been thinking about in relation to my own game. But the problem I'm having is I still don't know whether or not I want to go the route of like self-publishing or Kickstarting or whatever, or actually, you know, just licensing it or selling it to a large publisher and letting them run with it. And so I'm in this sort of limbo period where I'm deciding whether or not I want to buy art or not. And everything I've heard from people that have gone the traditional publisher route is not to spend money on art, because once you get licensed or once, you know, once they buy your game, they're going to use their own artists. So if you've spent a ton of money on art, yeah, it looks great when you pitch it to them, but they're just going to throw it out the window and use their own artists.
Watch to
redo the art.
I'm gonna tell you why you should buy your own art. And real simple. Okay. How can I do this really well? You want to go out and buy a pizza. Oh, actually, do you like pizza? What's your favorite food? We'll go with that one. What's your favorite food?
Steak. Let's say steak.
You got a steak. All right. Got a nice steak. Nice, thick, juicy, bone in the middle, good T-bone, an awesome steak. Now someone says, okay, I'm going to put some sauce on this. I'm going to put this A1 sauce I have. It's in a jar. It's good. It's A1. It's nothing crazy. Or I'm going to give you this really high-end, super-duper stuff. Which one do you want to pick?
Of course, the high-end stuff.
Right. But what if you can't afford the high-end stuff?
Well, you got to stick with what you can get, right?
Right. And the A1 tastes good, right?
Yeah.
It's not horrible, but it's not the super-duper stuff. Is it going to ruin the steak? No. It's going to make the steak still going to taste good, but it's a good steak. This is just not going to be as good as the super duper sauce you'd get. But here's the kicker. Once you've got your steak made, and you say you're going to, or your game made, you're going to sell it to somebody else. That's your plan. I don't think that's ever a good plan. I think the best plan is making your own money first and having them come to you. Mm-hmm. Because once they come to you, you have all the power. And best of all, if you sell your game to somebody else, you're going to wind up with a pretty standard deal, which I'm assuming will be about, you know, any smart person will give you 7% licensing deal. 7%, which is not unrealistic. It's very, very normal. It's very, very the same. Yes, your name gets in the game and you get to publish it and they get to add art to it. But if you do all the work yourself, you understand the whole process from beginning to end. So you know when you're getting screwed on the numbers. Because a lot of people don't know the numbers. You know, how much does a good piece of art cost? How much money should I be making on each one of these decks? How much does it cost you to make the decks? How much does it cost you to do the editing? How much does the writing cost you? You know, what happens on a misprint on a print run? How do I deal with printers to get a better deal from them? These are all skills you'll learn by yourself when you do it. And the mistakes you make will cost you money. And once it costs you enough money, you'll learn how to do them quicker and faster and not make those same mistakes. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it's great that people want to sell to these big companies. But think about what you just said. You want to sell to these big companies? How many people think are selling to these big companies? Let's just count out the top-end pro guys who do it professionally. Let's count those guys out. Now just include the guys who work there who want to sell a game to the company they work for. Then on top of that, talk about the next top 10% guys, the top elite guy who are sending in stuff to be sold to this company to get bought by them. Then you get the middle-tier guys that are like, pretty good, but okay. And they're sending stuff in. And then there's you. This is why Hollywood always seems to get scripts written by people who've already gotten to Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not because they're better. I'll give you the one that drives me crazy. This, oh my God. Who here's seen the movie, Chronicles?
Chronicle? Was that the time travel one?
No, the superhero one.
Oh, Chronicle.
Yes, Chronicle. Who saw that? Is it a superhero one?
Well, the guy.
Most people who saw it, you know, they liked it. That it was very good. The guy who wrote it just happened to be a guy who lives down here. His name's Max Landis. His father was also a director and writer in Hollywood. Maybe you've heard of some of the movies that he's done, like Animal House and Ghostbusters.
Hmm. Ah, so, okay. Yeah.
So this kid is a good writer. he's a good writer. He's solid. He's creative. He's a YouTube video. I suggest everyone to watch. It's amazing. It's the Death of Superman one, which is awesome. He talks about it is a 40-minute video of him talking about how he would have done the Death of Superman. And it is the best, coolest thing you'll ever hear. It's amazingly cool.
And funny as shit.
Oh, yeah. And then he went on to do another one where he talks about, and I don't want to ruin who he's talking about. Well, I'll tell you the first one. The first one is about a children's book we've all read and loved, and he puts it in a totally different light and makes it awesome. And he's just pitching. And this guy is, you know, he's a Hollywood darling, and he's, you know, people want him to write X-Men. He's gotten a lot of people at DC Comics who want to write for him. I mean, he's become a hot new thing. But the problem is there's only so many of those guys. And to get in the industry, you kind of have to find someone you know who can get you in kind of through the back door. And once they get you in, you're in. But if you can prove to them that, you know, if you can prove to them that you don't need them, you get a lot more power on your side. Because, you know, there's nothing cooler than a guy coming to you saying, hey, we saw this little game you made. We're going to give you this much. And you go, no, I don't need that. Mm. You know, look at the guys who did, good Lord, what is it called? Cards Against Humanity. You know, that's a pretty basic card. I mean, it's black and white. They don't even need pictures on it. And that thing sells like hotcakes. Hotcakes. That thing's in Target now. It's that popular.
You know? So there you go, Cam.
Gotcha.
Get your success, and then have that success attract more success.
Well, I mean, I'm an entrepreneur by nature. I mean, that was the route that I wanted to go through. But, you know, just I've been doing a lot of research on my own, and I do have sort of an in with a couple companies, a couple of the larger companies, actually. And actually, the person that convinced me most to pitch it to a larger company was someone on the inside of a larger company. And so that's why I've sort of been, you know.
Here's the important question.
Waffling that way. You know what I mean?
Has he pitched a game to the larger companies?
He doesn't work in that area, but he is, you know, higher up in the hierarchical structure and basically, you know, has said, well, you know, I think this has legs. It's, you know, we can probably put you in front of the right people.
You know, it's always an option. You know, I always say it's best to, you know, you go in and get to make your own option. But that's, you know, that's up to you. That's your choice. I always think that's the best way to go. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's sometimes there's nothing wrong with selling out too. Don't kid yourself. If somebody comes to your house with a truck full of money, take the truck full of money.
Right. I'm an attorney. We always take the truck full of money.
See, there you go. So any other crazy questions? Anything else crazy?
What do you suggest? And you sort of touched on it before. I mean, what do you suggest in terms of running a successful Kickstarter in terms of like a budget, a marketing, you know, maybe not, you know, hard numbers, but like a budget and the best bang for your buck in terms of, you know, where to market, like, you know, a game or an RPG or anything?
I have said it many times before, and I'll say it again. The best for me running a Pathfinder specific Kickstarter, the best bang for my dollar has been through D20 PFSRD. Usually, I've written a couple of things on my blog. For every dollar I spend there, they make me, at one point it was like $5 or $6.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, I can do that easy math. You know, that's simple. If I give you $1 and you give me 5 more, hey, that's great. That's awesome. You know, and they consistently have done that. I've had other people attempt to do it and it didn't work out that way. You know, I'll try anything once. I'll try anything once, see how it works out. If it doesn't make me money, I'm not trying it again.
So I guess a card game version of that would be Board Game Geek then.
Yeah, well, they're okay. I've seen a little bit of interest from them, even from RPGs, but it hasn't been like amazing. But I know a lot of people who do very well. There's a what is that guy's name? Stonemaier Games. It's RPG Universe. What is it? The guy who used to own RPG Now has his own company, Minion Games. That's it. He does tons of games, and he's one who has what I thought was a brilliant idea, put on his website, basically notes for Kickstarters. Everything you want to know about a Kickstarter and what to do, it's on the thing. He's about 80 or 90 different posts about it. And you can find stuff about board games and role-playing games and what to do before, what to do after, follow his steps by step, and it works. And you know, I follow it step by step. You know, it's not that difficult to do, but it's a lot of, you know, you're going to be kissing a lot of babies and shaking a lot of hands. You know, that's the point of it. You're going to have to be doing that kind of stuff.
Okay.
And Kickstarter, you know, here's something else a lot of people don't tell you. Even if you fail at a Kickstarter, you can restart it. You know, you can do another one in a couple of months. When you find out what you did wrong, change that stuff, ask people what you could have done better. You know, that's a big, ask people directly what they want. And this is, you know, this is my, it's a running joke, but it makes a lot of sense. I go, you want to be a great lover? Here's what you do. Ask the person what they like. Do what they tell you they liked. Ask them if they liked it. If they liked it, do it again. If they didn't like it, ask them what they like. Works the same way with anything else.
What do you think is, I guess, how would you respond to the people that, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot on blogs and stuff, and posts that the sort of golden age of Kickstarter is over. That,
first question, how many Kickstarters have you done? If they tell you none, just tell them shut up. Because you wouldn't go to a doctor and you know, all these people said this about this doctor. What do you think? You've been to medical school? Well, no, shut up.
Right.
So it's like, dude, people will tell you the golden age of this is done. The golden age of that is done. Let me tell you something about what the golden age really is. It's like the freaking wild, wild west. I went to the golden age of PDFs. You know what it was like? It was like taking somebody out in the backyard and mugging them. That's what it felt like. Every day. And people weren't friendly. Now, people are friendly. They're nice. They're kind to each other. Back then, we were looking for any kind of way to stab the other person in the neck to get those sales. It was crazy back then. And I tell people, I'm much calmer now than I've ever been. When I was, if this was 2004 and all these people were online trying to sell product, maybe a couple of them I'd team up with. But most people, I would find ways. Let me tell you a little tactic that I used to do that drove people crazy, but it was a great little thing. I had a direct competitor who would put out a product on Monday. And it'd be like a product. Let's just say it's a space product. And the space product would have, you know, these cool lasers and this thing and that thing. By Tuesday night, I'd have a product out that had weapons and armament and stuff to negate the stuff he just did. And I kept doing that for like a year. And I went after this guy every chance I got. He hated me. He hated me. But you know who liked me? His fans were buying his stuff. It's, you know, it's, I only listen to people who've done Kickstarters and actually, I don't listen to people who don't do Kickstarters. They'll tell you anything. They'll tell you anything. They sound like they know what they're talking about. They don't. You know, that's why I don't trust consultants. You know, I'm a consultant. Have you actually done it? Well, no, I haven't. Then shut up. He's like, I'm going to tell you about mixed martial arts. Have you ever been in the ring and been punched in the face? Well, no. Then what are you talking about? You can't, you know, people who haven't done it can't consult you on how to do it. Only people who've done it can do that. You know, people who don't have children can't consult you on how to be a good parent. They can read all the books in the world. They're not good parents. You know what makes good parents? When you see parents who have good kids. You know, everybody will tell you anything. You know, all these guys, there'll be tons of guys who have these books of, oh, I'll do this Kickstarter book. Watch, read my Kickstarter book. You find out they haven't done any Kickstarters. They just grab other people's stuff, put it in a book, change a couple words, and look, I've got a book. I'm a Kickstarter expert. You know, ask them how many they failed at. That's the better question. You know, how many succeeded, how many failed at, you know? People who fail and still keep going to it, those are the guys that impress me. You know, the guys who quit and be like, oh, no, I didn't make any money, so I got out of there.
So only take advice from people that have actually done things. So they're, that makes sense.
Always. Only take advice from people who know what they're doing.
Sure.
sense. If they don't know what you're doing, they can put you down a hole and you don't know how to get out. And even worse, they'll take your money and go. And they'll make you sound like you're the bad guy. Oh, well, he didn't follow what I said. It's like, shut up. You didn't know what to say. You just told him a bunch of garbage. You know, if you had a Kickstarter and you failed, I'll learn a lot more from you, what you did wrong. And most people, if they're smart and humble, will tell you, yeah, man, I did a horrible Kickstarter. I was stupid. I did this. I shouldn't have done that. But next time, I'm going to get them. I mean, you can keep making mistakes. You can keep making mistakes, but if you keep learning from it, eventually you're going to get a success. You know, it's not a shame to, you know, make a mistake and flop and fail. That's not the failure. By not getting up and doing it again, that's the true failure. Because I tell everybody, I'm not that smart. There are tons of guys who've been in this industry a lot longer than me, or a lot smarter than me. Only difference is, I got a lot more will than those guys. And I'm going to freaking win. no matter what you do, you can hit me with a brick. I'm going to come back. You know, get rid of my company, burn it all to the ground. I can still come back and win. 90% of this is actively just going out there and grinding it out every day, every day, every day. You do that, you become successful. You don't, you don't. That's it.
Sounds like pretty sound advice to me, guys.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Any more questions for Lewis? We've really wrung a lot of pretty good information out of him as far as...
Oh, this isn't even the good stuff. What you get me for drinks for that one? That's
all right.
Oh, that's your consulting price? A drink?
Yes, stuff. I'm cheap.
Now, I just wanted to comment real quick on how, like, we talked about Cards for Humanity, and I realized it was like almost on your blueprint there, right? Because Cards for Humanity is basically apples to apples.
Yep.
And they even give you a free little teaser. You can do print and play, but who does the print and play? Everybody buys the stuff.
Right, but you know they give you the option. When's the last time you were at a company to give you the option to do print and play?
Without a Kickstarter attached? No.
Well, I mean, Paizo just started doing that. Paizo said, you can make your own cards for our stuff. That was a brilliant idea. When I saw them do that, I was like, they've just won. They've won it right there. Because best of all, they teamed up with a company that we can actually make nice cards. So if you get a cool image of yours and a cool card, someone's going to see that. And then Paizo might see it and go, oh, we'd love that card. Hey, do you have any more stuff for us? We'd like to talk to you about stuff. And then you can give yourself an easy gig working for Paizo.
There you go. There's another in.
You know, it's just that simple. You know, let people, you know, people are going to see how great you are because you do great work. That's just how it is. People are going to see it. They're going to see you. They're going to be like, oh, who's that guy? I got to see more of that guy. Yeah. That's just how it is.
Lewis, I got to say, for my part, your optimism and your sense of, I don't know.
You can say cockiness. I'm okay with cockiness.
Well, it's cockiness, but it's definitely, I don't know. I would consider it, I would say it's a more, I'll say it again. I guess just an optimistic point of view, you know, a glasses full point of view really gives me a lot of hope.
Yeah, I mean, look, always remember, there are guys out there who are much smarter than you, probably doing very well. But that doesn't mean you can't beat those guys. You know, F those guys. F them. If you want to be successful, go be successful. You know, the only person stopping you from being successful is you. Oh, someone might think something of me. I don't care what they think of me. I don't care. I care about what my son thinks of me. That's about it. Oh, they may not like me. We're not dating. It doesn't matter to me. I don't care. No one may like my product. I'll like my product. It'll be awesome. That's all I need to know. It's the most awesome book you'll ever read. Boom. That's what you got to tell people. Because people will say, hey, is it awesome? Hey, it was awesome. Pretty awesome. You know, people want cool stuff. If you make cool stuff, you'll get people who want you. That's it.
There it is. That sums it up. Make cool stuff. People will want it.
Can't argue with that.
There you go.
Not at all. Well, I think we've made a pretty cool episode this time around. Lewis, is there anything, as you are a guest, we usually will give you the floor one last time if there's anything you want to promote, plug, etc.
Only thing I'm going to be promoting is we're going to do, like I said, we're doing our Kickstarter, Crisis of the World Leader, which is going to be coming in, February. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be really kind of cool. Make sure you get the free preview on Black Friday. It's going to be awesome also. It's free. I mean, what the hell? It's free. Doesn't cost you a thing.
Can't be free, people.
Yeah, exactly.
Can't be free.
Awesome, man. Well, Very cool. Thanks for being on. We seriously appreciate it. This was a great episode. Very informative, very inspiring. Cam will probably draw up a pretty fair contract for your consulting fees as he gets his thing on his game off the ground.
I told you, it's always liquor. It's always good or food. I'm real easy.
There you go.
I can do that very easily.
All right. Well, unless anybody has anything else, Lewis, then we will let you go. We really appreciate you being on.
No problem. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Lewis. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Take care, Lewis. We need to touch base more often, man.
You know me. And a 5-year-old is always tough, but I'll make time. I'll find a way to make time.
Okay.
All right. Talk to y'all later.
Take care, man.
Later on.
Bye.
That gave me some hope. You know, I think I tend to put up barriers in my own mind a lot of the time.
I really liked his attitude. Like, I mean, that's how I've sort of approached my business. You know, it's a different line of business, obviously, but that's what I tell my clients all the time. It's not, you don't have to be the smartest guy. You don't have to be the, you know, whatever. You don't even have to have the best idea. You just have to be, you know, you just have to be willing to work, you know, harder than the next person. And you just got to just keep grinding it out. I mean, success is 95%, you know, equal to or a product of the effort that you put into it. I mean, obviously there's some luck, good luck, bad luck that's involved. But I mean, if you grind it out long enough, you're going to be successful in whatever you do. And so I like that he had that message.
All right, guys. Well, it was awesome having Lewis on. And Chris, thank you for bringing him on. I really appreciate you reaching out and getting us an excellent guest for yet another excellent episode.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. And listeners, I will remind you that our content is also free for the taking under a license that we have yet to publish. We ask that you listen to us on a weekly basis. And if you particularly like our show, subscribe to us on iTunes and or check us out on the streaming service known as Stitcher.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, add us to your Google Plus circle, and join the Nerdstravaganza HQ Facebook group.
Start your day off at nerdstravaganza.com, where you can hear this and all of our back episodes. Roll on over to YouTube and type in Nerdstravaganza into the search bar and check out all of our video content. And then kick us an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
And with all that said, Chris, take us out.
I've got 99 problems, but an erection that lasts for 4 hours ain't one of them.
Consult your doctor if it is.
Yeah, I think so. You need a shot.
Great show, guys.
Yeah, that was cool.
There we go. Everybody done taking notes?
It's pretty informative, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, I, you know, it's funny is I did start taking notes, and I'm like, what am I doing? We're recording this. I'll just
listen. Yeah.
Yeah.